time to start buying
it. How are we gonna restore 15 to 20 million jobs? I am your future.
We have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio. Boy, we've certainly had some very hot weather days around, and today I want you to sit back and relax. Go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in to 860 AM Radio in Philadelphia in the tri-state area, and if they're out of the range, let them go right on their internet and log on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Today, we'll be welcoming a few telephone callers, and we have some very important ideas to share with you and some very important things to attend to. I'd like you to go to the internet. If you're on the internet, go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You can click on the Listen Live link. It says Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. And, of course, you can listen anytime after that once the program is posted during the next 7 days. Well, today I have with me Joseph Evangelist, our consumer advocate. And, of course, Joe has certainly been up on his reading. And we've had many discussions in the last few days, and we're going to discuss some of the things that are important to American workers and the future of America. I'm also here with a member of our panel, Nicholas Groch, who is always willing to share his great ideas and, of course, maybe even tell us a little bit about his recent European travels.
Absolutely.
But first, I want to say that I've been listening to all the advertisements on TV. I've been listening to the tourists coming to historic Philadelphia. I've been going around to different stores and having people tell me what's on their mind. I hear one thing mentioned most, and that is investment in America creates jobs. Outsourcing in America creates unemployment. Right now, America's economy is more than flat. We've been looking at years of poor leadership. And what are we going to do to get the jobs back here? A few weeks ago, we talked about enterprise zones. We talked about helping small businesses with loans with Larkin Connolly and some of our other guests. Rick Carlton was here. What are we going to do to turn this whole thing around? Last month, they announced that there were 80,000 jobs created in the USA. That's pretty sad. That means when you put it over 50 plus states, that's 1,500 jobs in a state. Can you imagine the state of Pennsylvania only creating 1,500 jobs, or the state of New York only being able to create 1,500 jobs? That means we're flat. The basics, after this recession began, the basics that should have been created is 300,000 to 400,000 jobs per month in order to get the recession back in check and also to get people back to work. It hasn't happened that way. We need the basic, and I mean basics, 4,800 jobs a month for each state. And that's in the state of Pennsylvania. It's a huge state. 4,000 jobs is nothing. And that, you know, helps us to move forward. That helps us with population growth and so forth and so on. But we're not doing it. We're seeing people tell us that, oh, I went to the store and everything's foreign made. Well, what the hell are we going to do about it? I'm going to open the discussion with that. I'm saying that we need 250,000 jobs per month. And what are we going to do to create it? Let's start off with Joe.
Well, the hard part that you're going to have with creating jobs is you have to recognize that there's a large investment up front. And as I unfortunately wasn't here for Larkin, his discussion is, in the firms that I've worked with, is in many cases, there's lots of impediments, and they're not only government. is there's impediments to finding areas that you're going to work in. There's areas with labor. There's setup costs for healthcare if you're going to provide it for your workers. And I mean, in my experience, is before you even get started, you have somebody coming in to tell you what you have to do. And once people start losing their decision-making power, is if I borrow $500,000 to do something, and somebody comes in and says, well, you're going to have to do this also because, you know...
Because this
is a labor town, or this is a union town, and the city says that you have to use union labor for this, and there's stormwater, so you're going to have to pay this, and you're going to have to get this extra license because you have a parking lot, and you're going to have to pay this extra stormwater. And the solution is when they start with this and people haven't signed their leases, what they do is they move. And if you look at places like Chattanooga, Tennessee... is there was a big article that their transit system doesn't actually go to where the jobs are. So Amazon went down there, Volkswagen builds a Passat there. They have these huge plants, but you can't get to it by public transportation. And they're finding that all the people who should be able to get these jobs and would pull them out of poverty can't get there because they moved to the outskirts of Chattanooga and there's no transportation. So if you have a car, you can get a job. If you don't have a car, you're out of luck.
Well, the first thing I would suggest there is that all the political people work together to get mass transit. There would be a number of jobs. There is a reason to tax people for transportation mm-hmm. and all to make that infrastructure okay. The thing is, putting all these other taxes on businesses to terrify them, to make it much more easier to get out of Dodge, which means get out of the country, than stay in the country. I mean, we're talking about, we have 313 million people in America. We need to have at least 60% of that amount employed in some way, whether it's part-time, full-time. We have 45% of our population employed. We really need, they're saying on the televisions now, they were only saying it was 14 million. Then when I start beefing off about different things, they raised it to 23 million. But the actual figure of everybody needed to be in the employment scene is 45 million. Well, we only have 45% of our population working at this time. That doesn't... If it was 50, you could say, well, it's 50. But it's 45% of the population
and
working.
That's taking into account like children. That's taking into account retirees, that
yes.
type of thing.
Yes.
You know, one of the things, though, Joe, that you touched on, the notion of infrastructure, I mean, it's a classic technique, at least in America's history, in America's recent history, to use the infrastructural system in our country to create jobs. It's one of those situations where it's creating an opportunity for people to work, not only for people to work, but like you said, for people to get to work. And I think that, you know, we look back at the Great Depression and we see that that's one of the ways that we pulled ourselves out, with the exception of entering into World War II, which also helped. So, you know, we either work on the infrastructure, fix it. And when you think about some of the things, for instance, I was listening to the radio yesterday and I heard something about how they're trying to crack down on voter fraud in a number of states. In particular, I think that the one that was in discussion was Pennsylvania. And they're going to be spending $12 million of taxpayers' money. And one of the commentators mentioned that this is going to stop maybe, what, one, two people that are trying to register twice, trying to vote twice, trying to stuff a ballot. It's not going to... The means definitely don't justify the ends. And so, you know, you got to wonder, where are we spending our money and how appropriately are we spending our tax dollars? I think that infrastructure is one of the best ways that we can spend it, because that automatically creates jobs for people that need jobs.
But you have to also look at history. Is historically, we had a large area where we were rail-based up until, say, 30, 40 years ago, and everything mm-hmm. moved by rail. And then we went to unionized trucking. Mm-hmm. And when you went to unionized trucking, is what you did is you went to the rail hubs, which were outside cities, because you weren't going to drag everything into the center of the city. And so you put these
things... Well, you used to, though. But they set new rail hubs up, is what you're saying.
Well, yes. They put warehousing facilities up where they would run all this stuff because it was all consolidated. It used to be it would go rail to you know, say just outside 30th Street, and you'd move it into the city. Now you're going to truck it from its source in Michigan or Chicago, and you're going to truck it directly to where it is. So all those inner city hubs outside of, you know, Los Angeles and Chicago disappeared, and we're taking it because we moved to the unionized trucking piece. And the infrastructure for all of this now is you're going to be long-haul truck. It's going to be road.
It's the highway.
Which meant that we didn't expand the rail lines, which means that we can't run trains. So now we're looking at buses. And the problem is unless you have heavy usage on a route, buses are ineffective.
Well, they're totally inefficient.
They're very inefficient. So what happens is everybody, if you recall, wanted to have their 1 or 2 acres and move to the suburbs. And what we had is a lot of people who were middle of the road, middle class. They bought all these houses outside the city, and they would commute into the city. What you see now is the well-to-do are moving back into the city hubs. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they recognize that the cost of living out in the burbs is
far greater
than it is, and
At least balancing out. I mean, you know, it's expensive to own property in the city. It's expensive to own property outside of the city, but not as expensive as it is to own it in the city.
But look at it this way: is like when I was working in the chemical industry, is the guys who lived outside of Philadelphia, out towards Oaks, is they own their house. They paid $200 up to $300 a month to park inside Philadelphia. And they had to drive an hour each way every day in traffic on 76, maybe an hour and a half, depending on the time.
Adding to their healthcare costs.
Adding to all types of costs. So the problem is you look at it and you're figuring, you know, it's costing you 40 hours a month plus, you know, $300 for the parking plus whatever other hassle you consider the stress of having to sit in traffic all the time. And people say, well, you know, I'll move back into the city and it saves me, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars a year. So the problem is you move back into the city, the people who can't afford to move back into the city, if they have one little hiccup and they don't have a vehicle, now you're in the burbs. There's no sidewalks.
We didn't want sidewalks.
Oh, now you can't walk. You got to walk.
See,
in the street.
As I was saying earlier, we have 313 million people in the USA. 142 million of them are employed. 45% of our population. How can 45% hold up the balance of the population
that are paying no taxes?
There's no
they
way.
Have no income.
I mean, at one time we had 65 to 70% of the American people employed.
When was this? Like
this
80s?
Was after World War, after the Depression, after World War II.
This we is had years ago.
Very, but. With outsourcing, it took away all the jobs. Joe and I were talking earlier today.
It wasn't outsourcing that took away the jobs. It was the government prop things up. You have to look at two things that have happened right now. We have huge numbers of people who were in the construction and housing industry and the real estate, the associated industries, that there's really no work for them. I mean, we can't just keep building. It's just unsustainable in this country.
Right. So they need to go into other areas in order to make the economy.
But the question is for all. So we know that we have a huge pool of them that are currently unemployed. The question is, where are the rest of the unemployed coming from? And there's a statistic that came out, and they were complaining, as you know, that this recession has disparately hit minorities, African Americans, Hispanics and whatever else. And why are they getting hit so bad? And the reason it came up is I looked at where the layoffs are coming from, and the layoffs are coming out of government. So here's what I can tell is when you look at the statistics is over the last 25 years, as manufacturing disappeared, the government has hired these workers that would be in the manufacturing industry. They've put them into some job in the government sector. So what happened is, what you find out is, one of the statistics, the African-American community, 30% of all African-Americans in the United States work for the government. Well, when the government downsizes, and they're a huge portion of the government workforce, they're going to get hammered. And that's what happened is a lot of them got laid off just by the government cuts.
That's a perfect example of why the government hasn't been watching the chicken coop. and the foxes are taking over, is that we should never be in a position where we have to take in any group into the public sector. Every one of these people should have the ability to have a skill and be able to be employed anywhere. Nick, you could do anything. Joseph, you could do anything. Henry could do anything. Tim could do anything. I could do anything. We could all do whatever is necessary. But we're in a job and we're satisfied with it. However, these people that are being laid off have to review what is happening in the world of employment and then make some new changes. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to another edition of American Workers Radio. I'm Michael Blihash, your host. And when we come back, we'll be welcoming a few telephone calls. If you'd like to join us, you can call us at area code 215-922-1700. We welcome your opinions as to what we're going to do to change things around and get more employers back into the USA so we can get more people on the job. That telephone number is 215-922-5300. Time now for a few messages.
Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio, attorney at law, is available to handle your legal matters. She's part of the well-known firm Bennett, Bricklin, and Salzburg, and works in all areas of the law, including immigration, personal injury, compensation, and real estate. Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio is fluent in both English and Polish, and welcomes clients to contact her from throughout the Philadelphia area and New Jersey. If you need legal assistance, call Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio at area code 215-423-4824. That's area code 215-423-4824. The Polish National Alliance, America's largest ethnic fraternal life insurance and investment organization, encourages you to open a PNA annuity. Your deposits are tax deferred. You can open the account with $500 and then make future deposits in any amount in your tax-deferred annuity. For more information about PNA annuities, IRAs, and life insurance programs, call the Polish National Alliance at their toll-free number 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. And complete details will be sent to you from the National Office. When you call, you can also request that a local PNA representative contact you directly with further details about PNA annuities, IRAs, and their many insurance programs. Call the Polish National Alliance at 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723.
Dr. Eva Maciak has two dental offices in Philadelphia to serve you. One at 3084 Armingo Avenue in Port Richmond, another at 4250 Richmond Street in the Bridesburg section. Dr. Eva Maciak will provide you with quality dental care at affordable prices. For more information or an appointment, call Dr. Eva Maciak at area code 215-739-2787. That's 215-739-2787. Dr. Maciak speaks both English and Polish. Welcome back to another edition of American Workers Radio. You can listen to us on 860 AM radio as well as on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link on the left side of the page. We're going to be talking with, I see we have a few callers, but I would like to ask Nick to just tell us what he would do. Nick, if you were unemployed today, what would you do? And did you have any such experience?
If I were unemployed today, I would, number one, talk with Larkin about establishing an architecture firm because I found out that I'm licensed last week. So 7 exams passed.
Congratulations.
Unscathed, ready to rock as
an
independent
architect.
Oh, Henry,
do we have a little... Oh, very good.
But coming back to an experience that I've had with unemployment, a couple years back, I was laid off from an architecture firm that I went to work for because I got a good salary increase from them. I got a nice offer from them, good benefits. And within a year, I was laid off because I had difficulty performing under certain people that I worked under over there. They kind of saw me as a threat, fired away, and by the time they had their way with me, I was gone. But 2 weeks later, I was up on a roof with my Uncle John stripping shingles in the middle of July.
Wow.
So there you go. 2 weeks after that, I found a job as an architectural design consultant with another firm, and I went in and worked for an hourly rate, which was not as significant as my hourly rate that I was earning when I was laid off. And also, I didn't have any benefits. I had to pay benefits out of pocket. And I also had to pay my taxes out of my own income, which, you know, as an employee in the workforce, I was used to having all of that taken care of, you know, by the system that had been set up for salaries and payment and that type of thing, direct deposit. And then after about a year of that, I finally was able to find a full-time job with benefits. And it turns out that I wound up back with my old architecture firm that I left to go to this other firm that subsequently laid me off within a year. So those are the steps that you need to take. You take something that might not be the level that you would hope to be, or to have, that would be, let's use the quotes, below oneself. You take a job at Starbucks. You take a job behind a bar. You take a job someplace where they can take care of you enough to keep yourself afloat, and then work from there.
Now, I have
people
a question.
That say,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
There's a,
I have a question. Wait, I have a question. When you received your layoff notice, how long were you on unemployment and how long before you got back into the job market?
I was on unemployment. After I received my layoff notice, I was on unemployment for a month.
And then you were back in?
Back in the job force.
Yeah. See, this is where many people hurt themselves. They just waited out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's a different area here that we have to look at and this is an interesting dynamic of the three of us because we're actually three different generations. There's about 15, 20 years between each of us. And Nick and myself have had this argument before where Nick he's somewhat naive about what happens in some of the business areas. And when you did this, you were on the young side. You're still young. And you know, you haven't found yourself, but what happens is I was laid off when I was in my mid 30s and there were 40 of us that were bounced and it didn't even faze me because I had other things going on and I worked late the night of my termination. There were people who were gone a week ahead. The company would let them go. They were going, but it was interesting because you saw two types of people who took it. There were the people who it was a job. And there were people who the job was the identity. And Michael and myself had watched this television show where they were tracking people. And the one woman on there, she kept going back and asking for an extension on her housing assistance and et cetera. And the woman finally, after 9 months, said to her, well, we don't see you making changes. And she said, well, I was a vice president at a company and I can't accept the job under a vice president. And her husband was like, I think we need a trial separation because,
right,
you know, he was working
well
for Foot Locker to pay the bills. And she wouldn't take a secretarial job when offered to her because it was her identity. When you ask people about themselves, lots of Americans say, I'm an auto worker. I'm a computer programmer. I work for Microsoft. I work for Google.
I'm
work
an architect.
For this. And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is when they go out, there's this little niche that they look in. And regardless of what else is around them, they only see that because if they go from being an auto worker or a construction worker to doing something else, whether it's laborer, whatever the title is, they're offended by the title and they don't consider that as an option. And what happens is at the longer that they hold off on being open to other opportunities, the harder it is for them to get back in.
Mm-hmm.
Is when you look at the arguments that you get here is we had the Boeing issue in the Carolinas with the plant. We've had the union workers who sued Scranton over their pay. In Philadelphia, we have the school district that's fighting over whether or not they can, the school district, the union is fighting whether or not the school district can close schools because they don't have the funding to keep everything open. The argument that's happening is these folks don't see their lifestyle in many cases as tied to the job, and they can't, they're not flexible enough to
pull
deal with the change.
Pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Well, it's they don't want to change. Is they're very comfortable with this. And this is the hard part that you have is...
But Joseph, it's very true. And as we watched that show and we discussed it and I watched it again online, people have to get to the new reality of the world.
The new paradigm.
The new paradigm. Everything has shifted now. What was is no longer there.
But this is,
you have to grow up and become reinvent yourself.
And diversify your own ventures. Diversify what you do with your career and with your life.
Right, but this is where I have a problem is you see where, I think it was Alan West the other day that said, you know, that unemployment and welfare is a new type of slavery. Is the catch that you have with all of this is once you're on that situation, and the government is at fault for this, is because people don't have that plummet. When they go off and they go into unemployment, they have this long phase, and then they fall off the cliff after 99 weeks or whatever the limit is for the unemployment. But you know, when my friend who was on the union, he was getting $2,000 a month for his unemployment. Mm-hmm. And he sat there and he wouldn't look at anything other than whether or not he was going to go back into a union position because he could go out for 99 weeks on this. And his position was, I'll wait for the union to do it. And then after about 9 months, he got frustrated with it. But the problem that was I pointed out to them is they were bidding out jobs and people were coming in under whatever union he was in was bidding. So they were coming in a couple dollars less, and the bids were going to other areas. And it wasn't that these guys weren't considering that they would decrease their bids. They weren't going to decrease their bids, but they were offended that somebody chose the cheaper solution. Now, it was the difference between a guy making $18 an hour and $19 an hour. And in my opinion is they just employed 20 guys at $18 an hour. I don't know if I should be that offended with it. But I was getting told, you should be completely upset because they should have had to pay $19 an hour and picked out of this pool.
That's capitalism and that's the fair market. I mean, that's the way it goes. There are people that undercut. I mean, I deal all the time with contractors that undercut bids well below what I would expect a contractor to need to do a job. That's the nature of the business in architecture. And then what we do is we fight with these contractors all along the way, depending upon, what they consider to be documented by the architect and what they consider to be an added extra. And the thing is, it is par for the course. That's the way it goes. And so if you want to have a competitive, capitalistic environment in your nation, you need to accept that. And I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense to me that the people that were paid the $20 an hour aren't willing to consider, well, you know what, maybe we better make ourselves competitive. That's our job. That's what we do as architects.
Yes, every person should have to get to the point of make yourself competitive. If you're not competitive, then you have to accept the facts and do something else. We've allowed too many people to direct the sales of our life. It's, the winds went one way and the sales went up and everybody just went along with it. We have got to make people think for themselves and be self-sufficient. If this job dried up, then you have to learn to do something else. It's as simple as that. The political system has made it so that they made this type of thinking. That woman that was on that video and many that I've seen since. And in my discussion, even with some of the business owners, they tell me point blank, well, Michael, you have to go after the merchandisers, not only the businesses. The merchandisers are very heavily invested in foreign countries, and this is why they don't want to look for American-made products, because their profit from those imports is enormous. Getting it from the U.S., buying it here from one of the industries in America, is going to bring them 40% less on a dollar. Why would they want to do that? So you really have to go after the merchandisers. And in the future, we are going to spend a lot of our time focusing on the various products that are made in the USA, including automobiles. Mm-hmm. Some people tell me, you know, when you're mentioning different countries' own products being made in the USA, is there a problem with that? I said, absolutely not, because our Americans are being employed to manufacture the items, to service the items, deliver the items. But my whole thing is to bring more manufacturing here so that we'll be able to have competitive products made in the USA. We're going to pause for a few minutes, and I will get to our caller in just a minute. Thanks for tuning in. Go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in to 860 AM radio, or on the internet, go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com or Radio5000.com. Mayor, we'll be back in a minute. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, has two offices in Philadelphia, one at 17th and JFK Boulevard in Center City, and the other at 8510 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. Call attorney Michael Steinman's office at 215-564-1866. That's 215-564-1866. Or in the evening or weekends at area code 215-322-0235. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, always available to assist you in the English or Polish language. Polka Deli is located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia, and they feature Polish-style meats and deli products and a selection of imported products from Poland and Polish-American products. Stop by Polka Deli, 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, and see the great selection of products they offer. For more information, call Polka Deli at area code 215-634-3750. That's 215-634-3750. The Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, known as the PRCUA, established in 1873, is the oldest Polish-American life insurance organization in the United States. They offer outstanding life insurance plans for men, women, and children from $5,000 all the way up to $1 million of coverage per person. The PRCUA is a national fraternal organization, so people can secure life insurance plans and annuities from anywhere in the USA. Their main office is in Chicago, and their satellite office is in Port Richmond, Philadelphia, at 2636 East Allegheny Avenue. The Philadelphia office is open Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., and if you're not available during those times, representatives will meet with you in the evening or during the weekend. For more information, call the PRCUA Philadelphia office at area code 215-425-3807. That's 215-425-3807.
Good for him.
We're back here at AmericanWorkersRadio.com and on 860 AM radio. I'm here with Nicholas Groch and Joseph Evangelist and engineer Henry Triplinski and Tim Holleran. Well, we're going to start off by just mentioning once again, last month, America was able to create 80,000 jobs.
And but how many went on disability?
80,000 people went on disability last month. That's pretty
Actually,
unbelievable.
It was 89,000. We had 9,000 more on disability.
More people went on disability than found jobs last month. And this is pretty terrifying. And it just can't continue. But what's disappointing to me is, as I'm listening to the local candidates and the national candidates, they're simply not talking about what they're going to do to help little businesses get started. We all know that the big mega businesses are starting to not be what they were because you don't need it. But we could certainly bring back the clothing industry. And I'm not talking about clothing industries where you have 5 and 10,000 people, but you can have specialty items. Somebody works in a clothing industry with 200 people creating sweatshirts and t-shirts and, you know, all sorts of brand name items. Why do we have to look at all of the sports figures walking around with all of the stuff on their body made in foreign countries? The fans filling the seats are all Americans paying a decent price to see them, and everything that they give away or they have for sale in the stadium is all foreign made. The whole thing is lopsided. So the people who have been operating our country for so long, they haven't really considered the well-being of the American people. Before we move a step forward, we have a caller on the phone, and I'd like to go now to Marianne. Marianne, thanks for calling in, and thanks for spreading the word about American Workers Radio.
Hi, I want to talk to Joe.
Okay.
Joe, do you think it would be good if they would come up with a training program for some of these people that are on unemployment that had simply, like, what I call labor jobs? Well, the ones that the government supplied, because I was a government worker and I saw those layoffs that you described. These people were lost. They had no training for anything.
Well, that was part of the problem that we had, is these jobs were created to cover the people who didn't have the training to go into the public, into the private sector. And the government is doing some of this, but this is where the problem comes in, is if you look at the Obama administration had it in one of the Carolinas, where they actually created a training program to move people into this company. But the problem is the taxpayers are footing the bill to pay to train people to work for private industry. The failure of this entire piece is that we don't push things like vocational schools. I work with some educational areas and the vocational schools, and the state of Pennsylvania wanted to make web design and computer servicing wasn't something that they felt there were any jobs that could be available in Pennsylvania. So the Department of Education wanted to eliminate that. And my business wrote a letter stating, you know, we can hire people here and we also hire people overseas because we can't get people here. But a lot of it is we don't have training for the younger generation that's coming out of school. They come out of school unprepared for many things, and many of them come out of college unprepared to do what they need to do. So I think that's a failure. The other piece that I think, and I mean, personally, I'm one of these people who doesn't believe that incentives from the government work. I don't believe that giving somebody money to do something works, because I also don't believe heavily in giving out tax refunds instead of services. I'd rather see them provide somebody with a service. I'd rather it be that, you know, the first 6 weeks that you're on unemployment, you're fine. After that, you're in some form of training.
Right.
Is you you get your check, but you have to appear every day at some location, and you have to learn a skill.
And that's a great transition back into the workforce. I mean, think about it. You go from punching a time clock every day of your life, you're laid off. You're not doing anything, hopefully looking for a job for 6 months, and then you're right back to punching a time clock, but now you're getting educated. You're learning more. You're going to become that much more powerful as a member of the workforce having done that, and then, boom, you're right back into hopefully punching a clock for a company, for a business, for somebody that's going to be paying you a real salary.
Actually, I would go even further than that. What I would actually do is I would actually let the tax things that are coming is I would phase out across the thing. The argument over whether it's below $250,000 or above, I mean, in both cases, it's not going to solve the deficit problem. I mean, even Obama's proposal is only going to cut a third of the cost of the tax things. What we need to do is we need to take the money, keep the money, and then create public works, public training. Maybe 2 days a week you're working
absolutely
on something, and 3 days a week you're in training. And you do that for up to 6 months, and then you transition into, say, a supervisor position in that piece for, You know, where 5 days a week you're managing the people who are actually in the program, and then after 8 months you're going to transition into something. We could do infrastructure projects with that. I'm sure that we could retrain the construction people to pour concrete, or, you know, and move them into updating the highway transportation. The whole problem that we have here is people have adjusted to things. We take the earned income tax credit and all the Bush tax cuts, and people expect to get that big check from the government every year. And what's weird is people don't look at the tax return. All of these earned income tax credits and the child credits and all these other credits, on the tax return, they're listed as payments. So when you get a $5,000 credit from the government, as far as the IRS is concerned, you already paid that $5,000. And that's how it appears on the tax return, as a payment. It's a tax paid. It's your W-2, any estimated taxes, earned income tax credit. So the problem is we're diverting money out of the system, and we're giving it to people, and we're saying, well, you can go spend this to spur the economy. I think we'd be much better off taking that money and diverting it into providing to make sure that we have good services, that we have children who can go to vocational schools, and that we allow the adults who are on unemployment to register in the vocational schools.
Mm-hmm.
And let them go back.
Education.
Those dollars should be directed to retraining yourself or your children or whatever to get you back into an employment situation. Before, there were not all of these tax credits, and people only got back at the end of the year what they paid in. Today, you're receiving what you paid in plus thousands of dollars more for you to go out and spur the economy. If there's thousands of dollars more due you, it should be used for education to get you into some kind of a situation where you will become self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
It's not where you could just go spend it on TVs and radios and dance all around. This is totally out of the question.
Well, I'll give you the one that I take the most offense to, which is where I say that incentives don't work. And it's a combination of two things. It's the National Student Lunch Program and the SNAP food stamp program. And you see what happens in Philadelphia, and it's happening all over. The Philadelphia School District canceled their summer program this year. And there was a huge outcrying of, you know, what are we going to do about these children? It's always for the children. So here's the catch. The children are on food stamps. They're on food stamps. They qualify for the free breakfast and lunch. So during the school year, they get breakfast and lunch 5 days a week, provided by the school district. And the National School Lunch Program is the number one gamed system. It loses the most money of any government service. The next closest is unemployment insurance. And unemployment lost $14 billion last year in fraudulent or misdirected claims. The school lunch program is actually worse than that. So this is a big chunk of money. So what happens is, although the food stamp program is subsidizing the food for these children, throughout the whole school year, the parents don't have to pay for it. So when the summer came and they canceled the enrichment programs, that meant that these students weren't going to get breakfast and lunch. So the city of Philadelphia has opened 1,000 locations where you can take your kids to get a free breakfast, free lunch, and free snack if you show up at the time for that. So the problem is we've given people money to buy food for their families. Then we said, well, we'll subsidize the food during the school year. And then when it came time that people were actually going to have to take their food stamp money and buy food for their children, we said, well, we can't believe that they're going to do this, so we're going to have to pay to extend the program into the summer. So the problem is we gave cash up front to try to get people to do something when they weren't doing it and the kids were coming to school without eating. Rather than go back to the parents and say, you have to feed your kids, we said, okay, the taxpayers will just pay them now. So we'll give you the food stamps to buy them breakfast, and then we'll give them the free lunch anyway and the free breakfast, and we'll pay twice for it. And then when they come to the summer, we say, well, these kids aren't going to eat.
It all comes back to a lack of individual responsibility.
Joe, why aren't these things discussed? And why aren't they well known to the general public? I feel this way. You have your kids here today because you're watching them. It's summertime. They're not going for any free lunch programs or whatever. I took care of my kids. They were never on any. anybody's program other than my own. Why are we now the babysitters of America's children? That means there's no concern of the parents. What is the real reason that this is happening? Is it poverty? What are those parents doing during the day when those children are in these care centers? Are they in job training?
No.
Are they in, what are they doing? Watching television?
Yes.
What the hell are they doing?
Well, the other one that I found out in Philadelphia, is because it's where I'm at, is if you're on welfare, you can put your kid in a daycare center for $5 a day.
No, I so think this should all be, they should all have this listed on the internet so that the teachers, the daycare center people know exactly who the student is, who the caregivers are, who the parents are, what the parents are doing, and if the child is not supposed to be there and could be with the mother or the father at the time, let that child spend time with their parents rather than with strangers. Hold on, we'll be back in a few minutes. Mary Ann, hold on, we'll be back again. Thanks. The next portion of our broadcast today is being presented by the Polish Eagle Sports Club at 3157 East Thompson Street in Port Richmond, Philadelphia. For your weddings and special events, call the Polish Eagle Sports Club at 215-423-0800. And by Steam My Carpets, which serves commercial and residential properties in the Philadelphia area. Contact Jay Gryczynski at 1-877-778-3263 or visit steammycarpets.com. The law firm of Dominik Rostowski is located on the 30th floor of 1818 Market Street in Philadelphia. Whatever your legal needs are, contact the Rostowski Law Firm at area code 215-913-6090. That's 215-913-6090. You can also visit the law firm of Dominik Rostowski on the internet at rostowski.com. Dominik Rostowski, attorney at law, is available to assist you in the English and Polish language.
The office of Dr. Wojciech Zinn and Everest Dental, located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, provides quality service at affordable prices. For a full range of dental services, from general care to implants, veneers, and many other procedures, contact Everest Dental for an appointment at area code 215-671-0188. From the moment you enter the office of Dr. Wojciech Zinn of Everest Dental, you will witness the latest technology in all areas of dental services. The Everest Dental offices accept all major insurances. Dr. Zinn speaks English and Polish and welcomes you to call Everest Dental, 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, at area code 215-671-0188. That's area code 215-671-0188.
Welcome back to our Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio. We're on the phone now with Mary Ann, and I have a question for Mary Ann. 15 years ago, as you were working, what was the difference that you see from 15 years ago and today in the field that you were in?
I was in the medical field. Today they outsource it all. It's all subcontracting, blah, 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 blah. And I'll tell you the truth. I was a minority where I worked. The people that got laid off became addicted to the system. They liked those unemployment checks. They really didn't want to go to work after that.
And what happened after they used up their unemployment?
Oh, they found ways to continue it. I know one that was on it for 4 years. I'm still trying to figure out how she did it.
Very interesting. See, this is why...
I got to ask you a question. You wanted to know and talk to the people that run these daycares that Joe was talking about, $5 a week. Go home, make another baby.
Well, I mean, first of all, I know, and I'm sure you know, and Joe knows, and Henry knows, and everyone else knows what it is to make sure that your child is cared for 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You're supposed to know where that child is and what exactly is the positive situation they're in. What concerns me in hearing the news media is when people say, well, the mother was off, you know, in the casino and the child was in the car, left in the car. She only intended to go in for 5 minutes, but then 5 hours later, the child was discovered, you know, in the car.
But there's
roasted. There's this kind of thing. The people have just become very lax about caring for their children. And in becoming that lax, it's the trickled effect. It went from parents to lawmakers. No one's accountable for anything anymore. We should have more jobs in this country than anyone. How could we have full employment 40 years ago and now we only have 45% of the people working? How did that work out? I mean, we now have more modern industries. I talked earlier in earlier broadcasts about the clothing industry. If we made the clothing that we wear on our backs, the drapes that we have in our homes and everything else around us, we would have 14 million jobs more. That's not only making the items, that's delivering the items, packing the items, billing the items, advertising the items. When I say restore our industries, I mean every level possible. That's the bottom line. But there's been too many people sitting back, allowing all the negative stuff to happen and not looking for the positive stuff to continue.
But that's not the way that they took it. Is if you remember 50 years, 100 years ago, is if you had a kid and your family's, you know, children out of wedlock was, you know, the family wanted to send you away. And, you know, it was a good chance that you'd starve or you'd give the kid up for adoption or whatever else. And what happened is we said, oh, that wasn't good. And we stepped in. So now the day that the kid is born is you don't have to declare who the father is. You can say, I don't know who the father is, don't know where it is. You can start collecting, you know, I'm 16 years old, I'll start collecting, you know, welfare, WIC, whatever else I can get for the child. And, you know, nobody presses the fact that, you know, you should know who the father is. And if you don't know who the father is, you better find out. See, all of these programs should be loans to people to get them moving.
Absolutely.
It should be you're on welfare. Fine. When you sign up for welfare, your Social Security can no longer, you can't get a refund. The fact is you get your money from the government throughout the year. You don't get a refund. I've seen, and I've actually heard like 16-year-old girls say, you know, well, I have a daughter, you know, I'm not putting her on the system yet because I can get 2 more years. And then 2 years from now, I'll put my daughter on, I'll get 5 years from that. And when I'm in my early 20s, I'll have another kid and I'll get another 5 years off of that one. And I won't really have to work. And the fact is, you know, you can't, the government stepped in and said, we're going to make sure that people don't starve.
Joe, I'm going to stop you there and say, it's got to come to this. The day your child is in our care, that means the public's
care. Taxpayers' care, yeah.
Taxpayers' care. You are in some level of public service work.
You're indebted to your fellow taxpayers.
This cannot continue.
That
I mean,
makes sense.
We've seen it in Greece where they want everything and more and don't want to, you know, back down or understand that the economy went flat in Greece some years ago and they just wanted to continue as though everything is 100% as it was. It's not that way. The whole world has changed. Computers has made the world, you know, close as you and I are sitting. You can put up something on the internet and it comes up before you within seconds. I mean, before you used to have to make calls, do researching, faxing, you know, overnight deliveries, those kinds of things to get things moving. Today it's done at the click of a button.
Mm-hmm.
Your mouse is clicked and you're through.
And it's an enabling thing. It's an enabling thing. When you can do things instantaneously, when you can do things so quickly, if you can find a way to diversify your career path via the technology that's available to you or the technology that's available at your library, which is a public institution, it's a free institution, you can find ways to get yourself out of the condition that you find yourself if you want it. It's about incentive, too.
Well, that's right.
But initiative is the word I'm looking for. But that's where I think the problem has been, is whether it's cost of living adjustments that we put to welfare or whatever else, is we've maintained a standard of living for people. The extension of the unemployment people forced people to not have to face the issue that their job may not ever come back for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can go for 2 years on unemployment and you're in an industry that's never coming back, all that you're doing is the government is paying to delude you into thinking that 2 years from now, you know, my basket weaving job may be brought back from India. It's not coming back. You need to get people up front to say it's time to move on. And what we're doing is we're keeping the dog from nipping at their heels. And what happens is, as long as they don't feel pressured, they maintain the status quo. So then they find out that my job's never coming back. I need to get a job.
Well, see,
what they're getting on welfare is as much as they're going to get from the new job, because they're going to have to start at the bottom and work up. And they say, well, I can collect welfare or I can go to work. I'll stay on the welfare. And
welfare should only be a time of job training. Once you have some skills, you should be back in the workforce.
And we need to get people to consider their long game. It's about the long game. People aren't patient enough in this day and age, and that's a symptom of the fact that we have instant access to everything. I think that the fact that over the past 10 years, the way that we're connecting ourselves to the world, to one another in this country and abroad, is creating a condition where people think things need to happen instantaneously. However, they also think that they should have an opportunity to collect unemployment forever when it...
But it's not even that. It's more of an issue of looking at how things work. Let's say that you're on unemployment and you get $500 a week on unemployment or welfare or whatever program, or you can work for $500 a week. The problem is I asked my 11-year-old son, he said, oh, you take the $500 a week and you stay at home. And I said, well, 2 years from now, if you took the job, you're making $700 a week, but you're sitting at home getting your $500 a week, where are you better off?
Long game.
The long game is that. And that's where business owners come in, and that's why they do it, is they take a suffering now, and they do well later.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to the end of our broadcast today. I want to say thank you to Nicholas Groch, who I'm told today got his architect license. Yay! I'm really proud, and I'm looking forward to you being the long-term part of our panel. And when Nick comes back the next time, he's going to tell us about his trip to Europe. And I also want to thank Joseph Evangelist for joining us today. He's a very important member of our panel and, of course, our consumer advocate. I thank Mary Ann for being on the phone and sharing some thoughts with us. Please do call again, and I ask that you email today's broadcast to your family members and friends. It should be up on the internet in another half hour or so. Do email it around. Spread the word of what we're trying to do until Saturday at 11 a.m. for our Saturday variety program. I wish you the very best. Stay cool. Dobrodzenia.